Happy Friday, March 19th. We made it through St. Patty's Day. We've made it through another week. Thanks for being here, Greg and Mara.
Happy to be here.
Nice to be here today when it's so sunny outside. What a nice day.
I know. It is absolutely amazing, although I think the snow is literally coming back maybe tomorrow or the next day. So get out and enjoy
it
today.
Yeah,
I know. It's coming up soon.
You know, they say March is in like a lion, out like a lamb. So we're supposed to have great weather coming out of March, and then April showers bring May flowers.
Mm-hmm. It never works out like that. I feel like we came in like a lamb, and we're only like mid-March right now. It's only the 19th, so there's so many more days left for the roller coaster of spring.
We're in a little drought, though, so
we could use water.
Lion weather.
I'm totally into global warming. I just want warm weather all the time.
I want warm weather all the time, too, but I do enjoy showers, and sometimes I'm actually a very fast showerer. Is that a word? The other day, though, I was solving the world's problems, and I got out, and I was like, oh, my gosh, I don't know how much water I just wasted, but I got really busy thinking stuff.
You can't waste water.
You can't.
Okay. Yeah, too much information here. One year, I bought my staff waterproof. They make paper and pencils that you can use in the shower.
Ooh.
Because my best ideas come there.
Yes.
I thought everyone's did. So I gave this all to my staff, to which they were like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, this is the best thing ever. So for the longest time,
I would agree, either running or in the shower. You just want to waste water just drawing inside the shower.
I look to you to guide me on this, Greg.
My wife hates that I leave the water running when I brush my teeth. She thinks you should turn it off.
She's correct.
I would agree.
Really?
But when you turn it off, you should make sure that you get all the toothpaste down because I don't like it when people leave that in the sink either.
No, so I always wash that.
I know.
Conserve so and be clean.
But
conserve
I keep the water running when I brush my teeth. I don't care.
Yeah, but
I'm just crazy that way.
You were choosing the wrong ways to rebel against.
I know. Let my hair down. Just go.
Have you ever tried brushing your teeth in the shower? I've never done that, but I know some people try to work those two together.
Yes, because you can have your mouth wide open and get way in the back. I have only had one cavity in my whole life, which I blame on children because you are more apt
to ruin everything.
Yeah.
No. I don't know. This wasn't on the list of topics. I don't know where we're going
here. You never know where you go.
What is happening in this podcast?
So now that everyone here knows that we shower, we're all naked under our clothes, let's get to the naked truth of politics in the great state of Utah. We are at almost the end of the bill signings for the governor, and I think he signed 300 and something. There's 500 in total. There's been a lot of talk about, is he going to veto? Mara, is he going to veto anything, or was that just big talk, or maybe a way to get people to get to the table and make some decisions?
So, you know, one interesting thing about this is he's holding back some bills that have a little controversy to it.
The mask mandate.
Which you want to look at and say, oh, you know, the general course of action for a governor is if they're going to sign something and it's controversial, you kick that bad boy out the door right at the beginning.
Yeah.
And he's been, petitioned a couple times this week, and he's been the object of some of the public's sort of rapport. And you wonder, if you're not going to veto these, why would you have set yourself up to be the stage for these conversations? Why wouldn't have you just, you know, signed that, kicked them out the door a while ago? So one has to wonder a little bit about the strategy there. I'm not hearing serious rumblings about any vetoes.
Two things. One, he might not sign. You know, there is that provision that if he doesn't sign it, it just automatically goes into law. And maybe that's a message he wants to send with some bills.
Or he doesn't want his name on
it, but it still goes into law. He's going to let it go, but it's one of those, you know, hold your nose moments for the governor. From the outside looking in, I thought that he and his administration engaged very well with the legislature. Mm-hmm. Having been a former House member, I think he understands the process really well. He's known legislative leaders for a long, long time. And so they got upstream on a lot of issues that potentially I think he would have vetoed otherwise. And
I think
that, you know, in his state of the state, he predicted and kind of called the shot that he'd veto more bills than any governor before him. Looking at the level of work and engagement that the Governor Cox and his administration went through during the general session, I would be surprised if there's any big issues that are vetoed, because I think he got involved in those issues upstream.
Yeah. And the mask mandate everyone's been waiting on, he's made it fairly clear that while he's not excited about it ending April 10th, he also knows that if he were to veto it, he'd lose some political goodwill there, and it could also just be sit back to him five minutes later.
My prediction, I mean, he's kind of called out the legislature in that negotiation. He said, look, we did negotiate it. He's not been shy about being engaged in that, but he is making sure that the public knows, as the consequences of what we do roll forward now, the legislature can have more skin in the game and they can have more accountability by having these demands of the mask mandate ending. And so whatever happens going forward, don't forget, you know, this is what the legislature wanted.
And he did frame that up really well, right? I mean, yeah, he did say here would be the responsibility. And the provision is really clunky, but there are some provisions where local jurisdictions could
Salt Lake County and Salt Lake City will absolutely, I'm sure, on April 9th send out their press release.
And there's conditions around that, and it'll probably only be able to be extended maybe 60 days before, hopefully, knock on wood, the conditions are all met for it to be released. But
yeah, and some of those conditions might be met by moving up the date now for anyone 16 and older in the state by March 24th. You can sign up to get the vaccines. I don't know if they're moving them up because there's not enough people to fill those slots. They're trying to keep them full or just trying to move the timeline along. But March 24th is the big day, I guess, that everyone in the state of Utah can giddy up.
Yeah, big change. I mean, you get the impression that it is because perhaps the lines aren't very long. And so does this help ease that up? I still do have some questions with the state about focusing on minority communities who are really disproportionately still not getting vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And I do think opening it up to everybody takes away any complications, but the state has put some money into directing it at target audiences. I think it's really critical now that while you may open it up, the state and the counties, I hope, continue to do active outreach to those at risk and those in the Black and Brown communities.
Yeah. So
I'm going to practice chivalry. I'm going to open the door and let everyone ahead of me in line. Everyone can get their vaccination before me. I'll just go ahead and let them go. And
it's probably, I know, your best,
I see you're so judgy. I see your eyes so just looking. You're so judging me right now. You're just judging.
And so at the very least, you've got 90 days. A lot of research.
I say 6 months, and they have tests that you can see if you have the antibodies. And until I see a test that says that I am absent those antibodies, I'm not worried. I'm Superman right now.
My antibodies are rocking and rolling, and I had the virus about 5 months ago because I get blood tests regularly for thyroid, and so you can check and see if they're still there.
Interesting. You know, I'm telling you that there is not settled science or studies that tell you that you lose the antibodies in 90 days or any amount of days. They have not studied this well enough to know. There's the theory or the worry that that's the case, but I think that, you know, again, until I see it that I'm absent those antibodies, I'm not doing it. And so it could be like chicken pox. You could have it
with
forever.
You for the moment. I mean, what I think is important for all of us is that we stay conscientious, right? So whether your path is to vaccine or not, but you have a rationale that you're being safe and you are trying to keep those around you safe. Mm-hmm. I think that's where we should all be. Those who are sort of denying and are making it a cultural or political protest, I say not with a pandemic, but there are lots of means to keeping yourself safe and still honoring what you feel is the right health path for yourself.
Absolutely.
And so I look and say, yeah, let's be there, but as long as we're all conscientious about it,
right,
that's okay.
Conscientious and educate yourself. There's going to be things that are good for one person that's not good for another. There are always side effects to getting to COVID. Ask the people who can't smell right now, people who've gotten really sick or long haulers, and then there's people who've gotten the vaccine and have side effects too. Mm-hmm. So decide what's best for you, your family, your life, and try to be a good
medical
human.
Freedom. We should be able to make these just decisions. And I like that you said that, Mara. So reasonable that you would take that medical freedom position.
I am so reasonable.
But look, there's this weird leap of logic when people say that if the mandates and government edicts go away, then people won't be responsible or they won't wear masks or they won't take precautions. I don't accept that premise.
We're
don't think it takes
people. Don't we want to take care of our
health? I just don't think it takes
not
a government
premise.
Edict
it's
to do.
Actually proven out over and over. This is true. Under yours, you wasted 16 years as a lawmaker. If we don't need laws to govern ourselves, if we all just
laws
Lord
are different
the fly,
than these mandates
self-govern.
That we got going on. Look, it's like I thought that there was a hearing yesterday. I know we want to wind down this topic, but Senator Rand Paul.
He and Fauci went back and forth.
Yeah.
Well,
I will
with
say
Fauci.
This.
Team Fauci.
Yeah, I thought, and he's a physician, so his background is
he's
a physician.
He's an ophthalmologist.
So
he's an eye doctor.
When he says you've received the vaccination and you're double masking, do you not believe that your vaccination has worked? Do you think you're going to spread it? When you double mask, what is that other than theater? I do think there's he made the additional point that if people that get vaccinated do not see the ability to travel, to not have to wear the mask if they're vaccinated, why would they do it otherwise?
And so the leading designated scientist in this area responded to him. So we had a doctor who's not a specialist in this area, he's an eye doctor, assert that. So then the man that we have put in charge of being the leading scientist in this area answered his question and said, you're incorrect about that. It's not theater. In fact, there's a lot of science. And he went on to explain the science. And
I never heard him say why the wild virus versus the variant kept him double masked. I didn't hear the connection.
There's a lot of politics that goes from science too. I've actually spoken to a couple doctors recently who said their belief is in their own practices that once you're vaccinated, you're good. They encourage people to get vaccinated, but you don't need your masks anymore. And they think it's confusing and doesn't do a lot of good. And I've spoken to other doctors who feel like it's time to be done with masks, but they say they feel like they can't speak out, even though they're doctors themselves in the same range, because it's not a politically expedient, or they'll get canceled, or they're, you know, going to lose their license. And so I do think we need to give people the freedom to speak what they believe their mind and their gut tells them to. And
my worry to science, is it's just
science is never decided. There's always different ways to look at it.
I'm just worried there's a little bit of just trying to compel behavior. If you get vaccinated but you're told you can't take your mask off and you still can't travel until everyone is. So all those people that decided not to be vaccinated, until they do, you can't experience any freedoms or not have to wear the mask, or you're not supposed to travel. It pits us against each other, because you've done what you felt was right. You got vaccinated. You feel like you should be able to travel now, but you're not allowed, or there's argument that you shouldn't.
Private businesses have decided that your calculation isn't correct. I mean, what you're doing is wanting to side with one over the other, and I'm saying, so the same goes for a retail business or an airline, that if they want to restrict, if they don't feel
like you're making,
they have, and I respect that. I think they're making their own decisions as well.
But you've made my point, because the airline industry just lost their minds when Fauci said that if you're vaccinated, you can't travel. It's still not safe to travel. The airline industry came out and said, whoa. People need to start being able to travel. So that market isn't driving that decision.
So I'll also call us on this discussion and say some of this discussion isn't productive in my mind, because what we should all be doing, which is what we are all doing, is this does seem to be progressing. The United States does seem to be seeing light at the end of the tunnel in many areas, right? And so I think we need to still, like I said, I think it is an individual decision. Mm-hmm. There'll be consequences to that decision. This is a pandemic. There's complications to that. And you may decide you'll give and take in the manner in which you feel fine about. But we're also progressing on it, which is nice. And I think we should take a minute to celebrate a little bit more that I don't think I feel quite as intense and heavy about it as I did a few months
ago. There's certainly really light at the end of the tunnel.
Absolutely.
There's light at the end of the tunnel.
Stuff. We're talking about letting kids have proms and graduations.
CDC
and
this morning said 3 feet instead of six. I think that, anyway, that's another issue that came up politically before CDC made its scientific, you know, foundational decision. But there was an important study out of Massachusetts that showed that 3 feet would not put children at risk or students at risk. So I'm glad to see the CDC responded to that. Yeah.
So I think so far schools have been a very safe place. I don't think we've seen a lot of spread. I think it's been more the outside of school activities. So
unless it's a college kid coming back to my house as a super spreader, that kid of mine.
Your kid needs to stop having so much fun.
Yeah, she's like,
more study.
No social distancing in college, apparently, and then coming to visit mom and dad at our house.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
I had it down till she did that.
You did. That was your downfall. Hey, I want to talk about a couple bills that have been signed really quickly that haven't had a lot of attention, but House Bill 228, no more mugshots will be made public until a person is convicted of a crime. Where do we feel on this? As a news person, I somewhat have concerns about this, because how do you look for a suspect? Because oftentimes, I guess they'll have been convicted before you've got an old mugshot. Or are there reasons why we want to show them? Mara, do we hurt people when we show their mugshots before they're actually convicted?
You know, this is one of these simple heart issues, right? On one hand, you're like, yeah, there's a body that says, yeah, I'm not convicted. So you're showing me. And what we do know is we'll all watch the news that says, you did a horrible thing. And actually, if you were acquitted a few months later, I doubt any of us are really paying attention to that.
That is the
one thing that becomes very interesting as I think about this. What if you're a high profile person, or what if you're a person of trust? Like, what if you hold an elected office? And I mean, I guess in that case, you don't have to show the that shot, you show another shot of them, you will show their glamour shot. But it does make it interesting about, do we have the right to know? And in some instances, the arrest was made on some pretty good foundational work. But I do get the argument that says, well, I'm not guilty, so why are you giving me this round of asserted guilt?
Yeah. One question that I have with it, because if you put yourself in the shoes where somebody put your mugshot on the news and you ended up being innocent, you're like, you know, your life could be ruined for right. it. But I'm trying to think of an example, but Ayula Ajayi, who ended up pleading guilty to a horrific murder, we used his mugshot once it was there. And I think about a case like his, where using his mugshot put his face on TV, so people who'd known him for a dating app or previously came forward and said,
could help.
They were able to help track him down or track where he was to help solve the case and make sure there is a conviction. And then there were other women who came forward and accused him of sexual assault as well. And without showing that picture, can police place that person where they need to end up connecting all the dots for the crime and get the tips they need? And would those other people from previous crimes have come forward? I don't know.
So, you know, this bill was a lot, well, worse. Worse is beauty's in the eye of the beholder, but this bill was a lot more prohibitive as it was originally drafted. Law enforcement engaged in this issue with the bill sponsor and tried to find a happy medium, some common ground. I have a new perspective because I binge-watched that show, that Netflix show, Night Stalker, the crime documentary. Oh, my gosh. So, I don't know if you... I'm 51. I started locking my doors. Like I went after I watched this thing. I did, but I was like making extra sure when I was done watching that thing. But honestly, how they found him? He was actually identified in a East Los Angeles community from a mugshot, and that mugshot was from 4 months earlier from something unrelated to being the Night Stalker. He had been arrested for vagrancy or something, but there was a mugshot.
Yeah.
Without a conviction, but. I didn't put that together last night, but as we're talking about this now, it was that face. Once they knew who that person was and they put it on every front page in LA Times, everywhere in the media, because it was such a media story at that time. It was back in 85. The people recognized the images because it was terrorizing Los Angeles for months and months. And they are the ones that the community apprehended him from that mugshot. From it being on, being pushed out by the media as much as it was.
Yeah, you even think
the very day it was.
Famous cases where it didn't help solve a crime, but let's say Brian David Mitchell, who kidnapped Elizabeth Smart, ultimately that trial took years and years to play out. No one really had video of him. No one knew what he looked like. And so for years of coverage, we would be talking about this elusive person, but never showing people who this was. And I think seeing him and understanding and there was a lot that came with that. So I'll be interested to see how this plays out. I do see why there's benefits that you don't want your face on TV, but I also see that there's benefits in maybe solving crimes with it. So,
yeah. And this is maybe a bill that needs reconsideration or tweaking. I mean, it maybe the line maybe needs to be redrawn perhaps next year.
So more to come.
Look,
on
it's what we're grappling with right now. There's a lot, you know, public safety. I think sometimes we take it for granted, public safety and the order and the safety that we enjoy, our kids going to school, our businesses, our homes, where we live. But we also want to be careful that there's not, you know, brutality and things happening, you know, to people through, you know, by law enforcement and things. But that pendulum swings. And right now we are really challenging some of our premises of public safety by really going and scrutinizing law enforcement. I'm going to tell you, we've got to be very careful with that because there's a lot of bad people out there that will not be impacted in any negative way as we, you know, as you see these bills coming out there that go after law enforcement. And so public safety is a big deal. And we got to, you know, remind ourselves of that and not get carried away in the politics.
It's true. Public safety is important. And also we live in a social media age too, where once your mugshot's out there, it's out there for life and you can't recall it if you're trying to get a job or do other things. So I understand there's repercussions. I do want to say a big congratulations to our new Interior Secretary. And she'll be heading here. So if you haven't heard, Interior Secretary Deb Haaland is going to be visiting Utah. She's the first Native American to serve in this job, which I think is super interesting because a lot of these lands we're talking about that there's questions over our Native American lands or surround them, and having someone who understands the conversation and is part of it will be exciting. She is headed to Utah. Our entire congressional delegation, the governor, all of our local leaders have asked that we have a little extra time to look at Bear's Ears and Grand Staircase. Do you believe that this is kind of for show that she's coming here, Greg? Or do you really think that she is interested in talking to people and trying to figure out the best way forward for our federal lands?
I don't want to be cynical because I'm hoping that she's really here to listen and to learn, because I was involved when I was in the legislature with asking President Trump to reduce the National Monument in Bears Ears and Staircase Escalante. That President Obama made in that, you know, designated in that last month of his presidency. And Clinton, the Staircase Escalante, was in his last month of his 8 years. But we did have Secretary Zinke at the time that came, and we toured this area, and we looked, and it was a learning experience for me. I attended that tour with him, where I had thought that there wasn't any part of Bears Ears that was worth preserving as a national monument. This is something that Teddy Roosevelt began and started. We didn't have an Environmental Protection Agency. We didn't have some of the things we have today, but he did say by executive order, we should be able to preserve some of nature's greatest, treasures that we have in our country. And so, but it was one size versus the millions of acres you see the national monuments take on today. Somehow always in Utah. But anyway, when I went through that and we toured it treasures. By... When we toured that by helicopter, I was astounded that my takeaway was there are parts that I can see why we would want to make a national monument, where I was very cynical of the entire exercise of a national monument before I went there. That was a great learning experience. And it also, it's interesting, and I hope someone points this out, and I might be warning them too early by saying this now, if you see a banner from the Utahans, okay?
Yeah.
U-T-A-H-A-N apostrophe S.
They're not really from
Utah.
They're
not from here. The Utahans, I don't know where they're from, but the Utahans, when they have all their banners up for, the media.
Protesting.
Yeah, that's always kind of a, that shows that they're not really from here. But I think it's interesting. You'll see there are Native Americans that care about that area and feel that the National Monument designation restricted access to some degree, that, or it created traffic and more people that wanted to hike, or it became more publicized, so it actually created more foot traffic than they thought the area was receiving. So there's a balance, and I think that if the secretary comes and is really open-minded, I think the story is a blend. I don't think it'll be as black and white as maybe the politics have been.
Very open-minded of you, Greg.
Yeah, that is very open-minded. So, I mean, so as someone who would want to restore
the whole
larger
thing.
Designation, I will say I like the Republican delegation has said this is a good start, because I do think the Biden administration and this secretary should be given credit for doing what has been heavily criticized in the past, which is not showing up, right?
Yes.
So they're showing up and they're having the conversation. And I do think that she is going to listen. I mean, this is a sophisticated woman and a woman who is clearly balanced culture in her career and her whole life experience, and that's why you want people with the lived experience that she has, because she's toggled this her whole career. And so I do think that, and I have appreciated that our delegation has said, yeah, we're recognizing that Biden said go, she has said I want to go. They are willing to put feet on the ground. She's not doing a flyby, because a common trip is I touched down and then I left. They're not. She's staying for a minute. I think she wants to have the conversation. I do say, I mean, if she comes to a different conclusion than you, I don't. And you set this up well, Greg. I mean, if she thoughtfully considers and comes to a different conclusion, I don't know that that's just because she's closed-minded. I think she may have a different point of view than the Trump administration.
Well, remember, we had asked President Trump to rescind completely the monument, but those monuments remain. There are national monuments in Bears Ears and Staircase Escalante. They were just pulled in and are actually closer probably to the Teddy Roosevelt model that they had done. I'll just say this. Her presence is absolutely important, and I think it's significant because when Bill Clinton announced the Staircase Escalante National Monument, he did it from Arizona at the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
When President Obama did it, he was in Hawaii tweeting it, showing pictures of Arches National Park, which has nothing to do with Bears Ears. And that was the image he sent out by tweet. And so it's not lost on Utahns when there's that kind of that disconnect. And so this visit is important, and I will not be cynical about it. I am burning a candle that this is going to be an eye-opening experience.
Michael Levitt, when Clinton designated that, just went apoplectic, right? He went out of his head.
That's a great use of apoplectic.
And I just thought, oh, man, You sow what you reap, my friends. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You were shocked that President Clinton didn't come speak to the Republican delegation. It seems so naive. So I, again, want to give extra hats off to Biden for not taking that traditional, hey, Utah's a red state, I'm not interested in it. That's not their point of view.
And hats off to President Trump. He didn't rescind. He sent his interior secretary out. They did an exhaustive tour, and they kept those national monuments, but they just pared them back.
Which is important. I think the important part is that we're all talking about protection, and the protection is a double-edged sword. Everything is a double-edged sword, but when you protect something, all of a sudden people are like, ooh, bear's ears, grand staircase, I haven't heard of that. You see pictures online, you want to go. And I think about the trips I go to Zion National Park. It's like the Disney World of outdoors, where there's more garbage and more foot traffic and more people. And so while we're protecting and setting that land aside, we're also abusing and using it and highlighting it too. And so there has to be a careful balance of, yes, we might be keeping oil drilling off, but we're inviting the whole world to come here. And sometimes as humans, we're not nice to these places that we come to.
That exact scenario you described was happening there. They're search and rescue when people hike and they get lost. It's a volunteer effort. And I spent time with a gentleman that does that by way, you know, he volunteers and does it. And he said that in the years past, I don't know, I can't remember how many search and rescue operations they had to do, but since that designation had happened in December to May, it was more than, just in that December to May, that 6 months was more than a year or 2 years collectively before that, because it brought so much attention to that area, and the foot traffic and the people coming to hike that area and discover it was a lot more. And so you can make that argument, is that actually preserving some of the, because there's some stuff there that,
Craig, I think locals you're arguing for mandates. I mean, like, you want to mandate
just saying,
the behavior.
I just want to pare it in and make it smaller. I like it the size that President Trump made.
We will find that this is one of the best assets that's ever happened to Utah to keep these designations. And we will be a more and more special place
keep
to live
exactly
for,
as they are
for
now,
generations
just how they
because
are now.
Of these designations.
I'll be excited to see what happens. We can all gather around the table after she's been here. So
she's
going to
come and say, you know what, President Trump had it right. He was exactly right here. I don't know what I could add to
We're
the good work that
chance.
He and Secretary Zinke
wow.
did. That's what he's going to say.
You just expressed your dreams.
Yeah, I'm optimistic.
All right, do you know what? There's one place I know you two do come to the table and sometimes have discussions on the inland port. Did you, either of you, go to the most recent meeting?
Yeah, I did.
Did you sit next to each other, or did you sit on opposite sides of the room?
No, so I mean, this is, the port meets quarterly. This was their quarterly meeting. Once again, there was a lot of theater. So I'll give, I think I have a very different seat at the table than Greg does, but you're right in that we both are pro-port. I will tell you, I am pro-port because I'm an environmentalist. And anyone who says differently, so the port jurisdiction currently is in Salt Lake City. It lives on the west side, which has been zoned for industrial and municipal development for years. Salt Lake City has granted the terms of the agreement. So if you hate the warehouses out there, call your mayor. If you don't like the truck traffic, call your mayor. If you don't like the pollution, call your mayor. The west side of Salt Lake City has been largely ignored and needs more infrastructure, I say, as a Salt Lake City resident. And so I like the port because it's a state agency that's intended to mitigate those. Now, is it going to bring more? Yeah. I mean, it'd be naive to say that it's not focused on enhancing the logistics network. But they're also doing the most innovative thinking when it comes to deconflicting, and that means fewer trucks, which means emissions, which is universally all of our concern is air quality. Mm-hmm. And those who say, you know, you don't want this, we all want better air quality. It's impacting every one of us. But deconflicting the trucks, putting more things on rail, that takes away traffic. Light is a huge concern if you live out there. They're the first ones that are bringing solutions to the table. So ironically, I mean, I'm not as sanguine or high on a personal level about the economy. I don't spend as much time growing, you know, systems and big business. I really like what they can do to impact the environment.
Yeah, I love economies. I love people being able to work, support their family, pay their mortgage, feed the kids. It's a really amazing process. Now, this is the part I'm excited about, and you don't hear this from the people that criticize the port, and that is it's a statewide system. It's not one location. It's not one area with a fence around it.
So we're hub and spoking it still.
Yeah, I don't even call it spokes anymore. I really think that these systems, I mean, you can access coastal ports from there are direct lines from coastal ports along the West Coast that come in that arrive in the state of Utah in different parts of the state. So the Long Beach, Los Angeles port, there's a there it's the U.S. government built it during World War II, but there is a spur that's been out of service for probably 20 years, but it's built. If it's repaired, it is a spur that goes directly to that, from that Los Angeles Long Beach line that comes through Utah, and there is a spur right there in Iron County. There is also connectivity to Beaver County and others. So there are places that it doesn't all start. It's not all coming, you know, into just narrow hourglass into Salt Lake County or Salt Lake City. You have Weber that has a direct line from the Oakland port that comes across the Great Salt Lake and into Weber County that would not be in Salt Lake County. And so as you see these, and then these roads, we have so much cargo flow on our interstates, our freeways. It started with the Intercontinental Railroad. Everything kind of spurred from there. In terms of infrastructure, transportation infrastructure. And so the whole state sees this kind of activity already. If you can capture that value of the cargo flow and you can start connecting rail in a more efficient way, every rail car takes 3 trucks off the road. That should be good news to everyone. That should be something that we're all supportive of because, as Mara pointed out, the trucks are polluting and they do impact our air quality, especially in the Wasatch Front. So, look, it's a system, and I'm excited about that. And when you get off of the Wasatch Front, but more particularly if you get out of Salt Lake City and Salt Lake County, you will find communities that have seen their counties, because we have 29 counties in the state of Utah.
We have a few.
And there are many counties that have been shrinking census after census. These communities are, their young people are leaving because there's not economic opportunity. Wouldn't it be nice to see Utah grow, not just in 4 Wasatch Front counties out of 29 only, but see other counties around the state be able to maintain their population, see their families stay close to home, have opportunities for careers. That's what this is all about. And I think that is, for the criticisms or worries I hear, this system is going to mitigate and actually address. I don't see another path to address your population growth. Mm-hmm. If we are going to grow, if you keep shoehorning it into 4 counties, we're going to have some of these problems.
But Heidi, to your setup, one thing that's going to continue to be so interesting about the port is, for whatever reasons, it's the epicenter of a lot of drama and theater, and it's the focus of so many
people.
Critics
weren't thrown out of it this time, though. At least I didn't hear about it. That's exciting.
Exactly. There were no arrests made.
That's what's so great about Zoom. How do you throw anyone out on Zoom?
I know. So, and I do want to mention that there are a couple dramatic things going on behind the scenes, because the Supreme Court's agreed to hear Salt Lake City's case, saying that the Inland Port Project was kind of taken away from their jurisdiction. And SB 243, I don't think has been signed yet, and that's the Infrastructure Banks Bill, which would give $75 million for the Inland Port Projects. So I guess that's another one. We're waiting on the governor to see if he signs.
Yeah, so the Supreme Court will be a big moment, right? It's been a couple of years in the making. I want to say it's at the end of April, like in the 20s, sometime in April, the fact that the Supreme Court took this case. It's really from the court's point of view, it's a local jurisdiction issue, as you said. You know, it's about who has what controls. But the fact that it's coming to a head after many appeals will be interesting, and I hope put some of the drama to rest. And it looks like the legislature has appropriated $75 million to go to the port for, in fact, these 29 county infrastructure plays.
There's not a jurisdictional area in the rest of the state, so it's exciting to see that the port can be partners with different regions of our state and the counties in those regions where they have rail and they have freeways and this cargo flow of you know, trains and trucks already coming through. How do you create value from that? And so it's exciting. I think it's the most momentous occasion since the passage of the bill that created the Inland Port. This is kind of, now you're going to start to see things happen. We're going to quit circling it and talking about it. And now we're going to see people come together.
We're going to see the actual ocean containers. This is going to sound weird. This is a weird fetish I have of mine, but I like stacked up ocean containers. A lot of them are like red and kind of a turquoisey blue color. And I just like the contrast, and they look kind of pleasing to my eyeballs.
Then you
I
will
like
them.
It. So
you
I will
like
they're
it. They're pretty.
It'll be my Instagram shop place. I'll go there just to get my photos taken with my family. It'll be the new thing instead of standing in the middle of the railroad
I can wonk out about that whole thing, but
Heidi's
I won't.
Family
I'll
visits
spare
sports.
The podcast.
We don't take family pictures, so it probably won't happen. We have so many more issues that I'm like, ooh, which ones do we get to first? Utah is going to be getting a lot of stimulus money. Hopefully people at this point in the great state of Utah are receiving their $400 per person in their accounts. I've heard a lot of people have.
$1,400?
$1,400 per person. So I think the question now is how people will they'll spend that. The stimulus, I was going to pull it up here on my phone. I forget how much money is. It's a lot. So let's see. $1.52 billion will go to the state. Local governments will get about $1.1 billion. another 1.1 for other government agencies, $704 million for the individuals. Those are the checks that we're all getting, $3.76 billion total there, and $8.39 billion for all of it together. It's a lot of money the state's getting. Can we spend this wisely, Mara? It's a lot of money, and they always come with deadlines and when you have to spend it.
Yeah, I think it's a three-year deadline for most of these projects.
2024, I think,
And I think, you know, the state is a big enough economy that they can do they can do some creative budgeting, legal but creative budgeting, where they can probably get it into play. Who's really interesting is this bill really focuses on local governments. I mean, you see local governments getting almost as much as state governments
do. A lot,
yeah. And they designated by jurisdiction, so you're notified how much you're getting. And in many instances, what will be interesting is how the local jurisdictions, can they produce this, can they put this much money in? What we know from the CARES Act is you can't give it back. There were the same formula was used for the CARES Act, and there were some local jurisdictions who were like, oh, we got $20 million, we used $15 million, we'll give you the others back. At the time, whether it was Trump or Biden, the federal administration said, no, we're not taking money back, which I think is a problem meant for many of us philosophically.
Yes.
But that happened under both administrations. And what will be interesting is if I were a local service district, or frankly, if I were a citizen that had a really good project that fell into water, sewer, and 5G infrastructure, anything with telecom, remember there was a city that built a tubing hill, I would say contact your local county commissioners and share some ideas, because there's some opportunities to really spur local economies and actually inject local businesses with some business. One of the ironic things about this infusion is we know that steel prices are up, 80%? Mm-hmm. And construction labor and wood is up 50%. So in a weird way, this infusion also allows local governments to pay the rates right now, the incredibly high rates that it is to build anything.
Yeah. Can we be smart with it? Because I know sometimes when you have a bunch of money in your pocket and it's burning a hole, you just go buy candy cigarettes or whatever you do. Oh, they don't sell those anymore. I was thinking about my banana seed bike days. But you know what I'm saying? You just got money and sometimes you don't think through it very clearly of how you'd like to spend
the
money.
Is Utah going to buy the big screen TV?
Yeah. So look, it's sad. I think that this highlights, I mean, we're hoping that these political jurisdictions and will find ways to spend the money wisely. It highlights that the need might not be there for all of these entities to receive the amount of money that they are. I mean, there are certainly sectors in our economy that were impacted by the government decisions. It wasn't a natural economic cycle. It wasn't that, you know, they just had to live or die by, you know, economic conditions. There was a change, and there was people have been forced to change behaviors and not congregate and not go to restaurants. There is absolutely factually business owners and employees that have been impacted terribly by this pandemic. And so helping them, you get no complaint from me. I don't think the numbers you rattled off necessarily help those that have been most impacted by this coronavirus. So I would say that I would hope that there's smart ways to leverage these dollars and long-term projects. Infrastructure projects are positive. That's a good thing. It's not, I mean, I don't know about this tubing hill. I read it too, and maybe I don't understand all the context of that. But I will say that this could be inflationary as well. When you start sending out money in this kind of, I mean, the Biden-Harris administration is saying shots in arms and checks in pockets. I mean, it's breads and circuses right now for this administration. Does it have an inflationary impact? Does it do what they intend it to do? I do know that not Utah, but in other states, their cities need this money desperately because they made decisions that they don't get to print money, so they're broke. They don't have anywhere else to go, so this is a lifeline for them, but that's not the case in our state.
Yeah, so the feds aren't indicating inflationary behavior from this, to be clear, and we're ultimately in the kind of a... Oh, please. I'm going to go with the Fed over okay. politics for a minute. So, I mean, I do think that there's that. I do think there is some there's some cleverness in spreading it out among different kinds of governmental jurisdictions, and that increases the likelihood of it being well spent. Because while I agree with you in some areas that it's formulaic, the federal government always takes a rather formulaic point of view, and that it creates waste. And we've all said it. I think there's money coming to Utah that Utah doesn't need. I do say that's different, though. Can Utah spend the money wisely? Those are two different questions. So I will say
that is a good distinction.
I will say that doesn't mean that the state and the jurisdictions won't find clever ways to help local people. And what I think we want to say to our local jurisdiction is, yeah, you didn't ask for the money. You maybe didn't even need the money, but you know your needs. So be smart about that putting that to
you. Yeah, so if we're going to be $2 trillion in debt on the federal level, right, let's make smart decisions exactly here. And I think if you have a good idea, call your mayor.
I have a good, I have one that just went right across my head right now. What? I want a tram at that airport. Okay, I want them to have a truck. That thing is the worst airport. You got to walk for miles to get to your gate from that airport.
That's what I've heard. I haven't flown since the new airport. It is unreasonable.
I get that. I know there's a tunnel for it. For
I'm
that
sorry
trip.
I had to exercise.
Put that money in there. Okay. Get the tram in so, there. It takes you an hour to walk anywhere.
That's my rant. Board director. We would like a report back next Friday on how that conversation went with
you. Yeah, I'm going to say this is where you leverage those dollars so that you don't punish people.
No, and I do want to separate because we've talked a couple times about do we need the money? And I don't know that we totally do in every instance, but that does not stop us from spending it well.
You're right. I will concede that. I think that now that you're getting it, please find ways to
don't do stupid things.
Be smarter than the federal government and do something wise with it.
And you never lose out when in a growing state, improving your water systems and your transportation infrastructure and your broadband and your communication networks. None of that will do us wrong if we invest in
it. It is
things.
True. And when you brought up the water, this goes back to the showering earlier. This is why we're talking about it. We are the second driest state in the nation, and we had an emergency drought declaration made by the governor this week. So that's a good reason for us to only shower for about 60 minutes instead
of
70.
We're going to buy more water.
Buy more water. Truck in water.
Get some bottled
gallons
water.
At the grocery store. Oh, my gosh. We've already talked so long. We're at 40 minutes. Do we want to take a few more minutes to talk Republican issues and Democrats, or should we just save it till next week?
They'll be around next week.
All right. We do need to talk about it because Derrick Brown did announce this week that he's not seeking a second term.
That's right.
So there's room for maybe Greg Hughes to possibly take another unpaid job and lead the GOP. So we've got issues because I think both Republicans and Democrats in the great state of Utah are having an identity crisis, and they're going to have a moment where they figure out, who am I, where do I want to go, and what do I want to accomplish? So let's all think on that this week.
Okay. Yes, I won't launch from that, but I don't know that the name you just proffered is the best name to
it's
lead
not,
the party going
okay.
forward. But I can't wait to talk about this next
I feel week. Like if you led the party, it definitely would take maybe a more right lean than a left lean.
As it should. Yeah. Absolutely, it would. It's for the, and you know what? It's not even right
over.
Anymore. You
it
know what it is? The Democrats
over.
Have walked away from the hardworking men and women of this country. It's just the everyday people now that
You're
the Republicans represent.
No, that's
I'm not.
Nice. Chairman Hughes.
No, I'm not. It's just
Thank
that, that's what the party
us.
Is now. You guys, Democrats are now the socialists. They just want bigger government. They want shots in arms and checks in pockets.
That's right.
Can
that's
I say
what
that
I
if
want.
I never see another shot in another arm, I'd be fine with it. I'm just like so over it. Amen. I don't know if I want people to start baring their butts or what, but I just want different
As
video.
A needle phobe, well, the coverage is killing me.
If I'm supposed to get a vaccine sometimes so I don't get judged by Mara and have her look at me like she does, can we stop hearing all the stories about how horrific the second shot is? Everybody, I just keep hearing these terrible stories. It's like, wait a minute. I thought the point was not to get sick. This sounds worse than what the coronavirus was for me, at least. It's not a motivating factor, so I don't want to hear that either.
If you do get sick, we wish you the best. And
ignorance
please
is bliss.
Report your side effects to
just
bears.
Don't tell me if you want me to take it. My gosh.
I love this music I have where it can just make us stop talking.
I know. It's good.
Thanks for listening. Tell your friends about the fun
it's better
you
than
have
the mute
listening
button.
To take two. Bye-bye.